Avoir un groupe avec Sean Kirkpatrick, c'est un peu avoir un groupe avec un fantôme, ou quelqu'un en tout cas qui sait jouer avec les fantômes. Ça a toujours été sa touche, sa patte particulière, en particulier bien sûr dans son groupe principal qui s'appelle Swell, qui est un groupe très 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 important pour nous dans cette émission, le morceau caché. Sean Kirkpatrick, il joue avec les fantômes parce qu'il joue avec les silences, il joue avec les rythmes incomplets. Incomplet, ça ne veut pas dire brinque-ballant. C'est toujours étonnamment carré, mais carré bizarre. Carré de San Francisco. Et il y a toujours un jeu un peu oblique chez Sean Kirkpatrick qui rend ses rythmes très musicaux en fait, presque mélodiques et toujours très émouvants. Quelque chose de profond et de signifiant dans les rythmes qu'il joue. Un petit peu comme Elvin Jones quelque part. Un rythme n'est jamais là par hasard. Et il y a toujours un petit élément de surprise. Une petite accroche, notamment à travers ce qui manque, à travers ce qui n'est pas joué. Et qui en dit long. On a eu la chance d'interviewer Sean Kirkpatrick pour cette émission, ce premier volet autour de la syncope. Et on remercie d'ailleurs à cette occasion à Découvrir Absolument qui nous avait donné une première opportunité de discuter avec Sean et ses acolytes de Swell. Et donc forcément ça a rendu les choses un peu plus faciles quand on a décidé de le recontacter pour nous parler plus spécifiquement de la syncope qui est donc le point de focalisation de cette émission.
So yeah, we've been working on this program with a specific focus on syncopated drumming. And, you know, you're an obvious choice for an interview about it because you're like the figure of syncopated drumming, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I've heard that before. A lot of people have said that.
I could tell you about the very first time I heard Swell and I discovered your drumming style was through 41. And so there's this opening drum fill in Is That Important, which is followed by no beat. And
yeah,
that's genius. It's just the, you know, the eighth notes on the hi-hat. And then when you finally get started with a beat, it's an incomplete beat. And I was like, what is happening? What's, you know, I was so enthusiastic and mind blown. So, you know, what, I guess, yeah, can you tell me a little about your approach of this incomplete drumming style and how you play with silence as part of the rhythm patterns that you come up with?
Chance beside the facts we see, but she said démarrer cette conversation avec Sean Kirkpatrick en parlant de la chanson « Is That Important » de Swell. Je lui explique que c'est la première expérience du jeu de batterie de Sean Kirkpatrick que j'ai jamais eue. Et en fait, ça commence avec une surprise quoi, d'entrée de jeu, puisqu'il y a une intro qui est assez longue. Pendant toute cette intro, Sean se contente de marquer les croches au charlet de sa batterie. Et puis, il y a un rythme de batterie qui semble démarrer. Par un roulement, et en fait le roulement n'est pas suivi par un rythme, donc c'est la première surprise qu'il nous réserve au début de cette chanson. Et ensuite, quand le rythme finit par attaquer, comme vous venez de l'entendre là, c'est un rythme qui est incomplet, un rythme qui comprend donc une ellipse, un silence, un fantôme de caisse claire. Et voilà donc ce que Sean a à en dire, et que je résumerai bien sûr juste après en français.
Good observation. Yeah, so I guess with Swell it all started. I mean, it might have been obviously influenced by my youth, but with Swell anyways, I always wanted to play less is more, letting other things have the space to breathe. And so when you do play, it has that much more impact, you know. I don't know, David's this guitar playing, this strumming, the acoustic guitar, I always felt like needed a lot of space because it's so percussive anyways. Mm-hmm. So that sort of set up the Swell style of drumming. I just can't stand, for me, to play standard beats like, you know, I mean, it's necessary sometimes, but in general, I like to look at, I always say I'm a songwriter's drummer. Mm-hmm. You know, I like to complement the song and write melodically so that it's like an instrument. Well, it is an instrument, but like, it's like a noted instrument, you know? Yeah. And as you said earlier, less, you know, you're like, what? Almost leaving you wanting more. Mm-hmm. So that's always been a big criterion or, you know, a influence that I wanted to portray. And again, Swell was the perfect band. David's writing style was the perfect band for my drumming, I've always felt, you know. I mean, I played in other bands and it was great, but something about the way we weaved together made sense with my style, you know. I don't even know if I would have gotten as much notice in another band, because I may have not have played the way I did with Swell. Mm-hmm. Even with The World Is Haunted, my solo stuff that I'm doing, I keep wanting to, because I know people like the style of drumming, I keep wanting to put that in there, you know, thinking, oh, this will be nice, people will listen to that, but often it doesn't fit, you know.
Right.
So I don't know, I would have to say it was just the way David and I worked together.
Right. I would say on The World Is Haunted, your drumming style is still very, very recognizable and very unique. And you know, it sounds like you and nobody else really. So it's still very much your particular touch.
De cette manière si particulière de jouer, notamment avec les ellipses, les silences, la syncope, c'est que il déteste faire des rythmes droits, rectilignes, sans surprise, même si parfois c'est nécessaire. Et il ajoute que ils se sont vraiment trouvés avec David Frill, qui était donc le chanteur de Swell. Le mot qu'il utilise, c'est le mot de tissage. Il y a quelque chose comme ça de l'ordre presque du de l'ordre textile presque entre ces deux, parce que c'est vrai que David Frill avait une manière assez particulière lui-même de d'utiliser son médiator sur la guitare acoustique. Pas très net, pas très droit lui non plus, et d'ailleurs on reviendra là-dessus dans ce qui va suivre dans la conversation. Voilà, il explique donc que les idées qu'il apportait étaient là pour se fondre dans ce que proposait David Frill, et je vais ensuite lui poser la question de à quel point l'un a pu influencer l'autre, et peut-être aussi dans l'autre sens, est-ce que David Frill s'adaptait au jeu de batterie de Sean. Ce à quoi il répond que oui, absolument. Parfois il y avait des chanson dont David lui passait une démo, et une fois que Sean avait commencé à poser une partie de batterie dessus, David refondait complètement le morceau en fonction de cette batterie très particulière que Sean lui proposait.
Thanks. You know, I was listening. I appreciate that. I was listening to something on an interview the other day with, I don't know how I came up with it, with Billy Idol. Oh, I was listening to it because he was being interviewed about sobriety.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a friend who's going through some serious drug addiction, and so I just started listening to it. I'm not a big fan of Billy Idol, and he talked about Steve Jones from the Sex Pistols, who also lives in LA with Billy Idol, and they're both junkies. And they started talking about Steve Jones' style, and Billy said, there's something about Steve Jones' style. He could plug into any amp and pick up anyone's guitar, and you immediately would know it's Steve Jones. You know, and so with you saying that about The World Is Haunted, and other people have said that when I drummed on a couple of, like a band called Caseworker from Ireland.
Right.
They're like, you could just tell, even though it's not your drum set and blah, blah, blah. So I don't know. That's kind of interesting. An observation I thought was kind of cool.
Yeah. All right. And, you know, you were mentioning David's very, very unconventional strumming style, not very straight, I would say, and also very unique in his own way. And how much would you say you influenced each other? Like, did you follow him? But after a while, at some point, did he start following you and your ideas of playing with silence and with surprise?
Yeah, that's a good observation as well. So when we first met, we both were committed to not doing the obvious. And I was living in Spain at the time, and so I came home for the summer, and we decided to make the first record. And we only had 2 months to do that, so I'd come over every day to the studio in the Tenderloin, and you know, we'd record, and then I'd come back the next day, and he would totally have reshaped the song around the drum. Like Get High, he wrote the chorus based on the drum beat.
Okay.
A song called A Town, he wrote the harmonica part based on the drum beat. What did you think about that? Hey, get it fine. Why don't you just cry? On, then I still get So yeah, we sort of created this relationship where he'd come up with an idea, I'd play to it, and then he'd reshape it based on what I put down,
right,
to fit or not fit or not fight with the drums. So we were very cognizant of the acoustic and the drums in our songwriting. And then also on the first record, particularly when I went back to Spain, he had all my drum parts and he started to live with them and reshaped half the song based on the drums. So when I came home for Christmas, like, dude, the songs are so different. What did you do? He goes, well, you did this and that and that.
Right.
So yes, he based a lot of his songwriting on the drums that were laid down and on Well, for sure. Well, I could go on and on about all those songs, about how that happened. Is That Important was an old song that wasn't even Swell. That was a song of a band that he and I were doing called 95 Pounds of Affection. There's one song you can see on YouTube that I posted. If you need to see what it was like.
Yep.
But he had written that song then, and when we were making 41, I said, remember this song? I had like an old demo tape of it. Mm-hmm. I said, we should do this song. And so he started to do it, lay down the rough tracks, and yeah, I put those drums in. As you said, were very sparse and minimal. And then boom, I came back in a week or so, or whatever, a few days, and he had totally reshaped it. So yes, you're very right on the fact that we listen to one another.
Right.
He was always a big fan of drums. He was, I don't know what it was. He just, oh, he started playing drums in the end, I heard, okay, before he passed away. I guess he became a pretty good drummer, according to his girlfriend.
Okay.
But drums, in my, he never, I don't think he said it, but I know drums were something he really admired and paid a lot of attention to. For sure on Well, you can hear that, the way the production values are.
Yeah.
Monty, the bass player, would always fight. They're too loud. Vocals need to be louder. The drums are too. The vocals need to be louder. And the drums need to be less. David, okay. Like, you know, especially, right, when, you know that album.
Yeah, of course. Of course. Suicide Machine, elle est sur l'album Well, et Sean Kirkpatrick vient de m'en parler en me disant que sur cet album, David Friel voulait toujours mixer la batterie très fort, et le bassiste du groupe Monty Vallier s'en plaignait un peu en disant mais les voix sont pas assez fortes, les batteries sont trop en avant. Mais apparemment David Friel a toujours eu une fascination pour la batterie en tant qu'instrument, et a toujours beaucoup accordé d'importance à la batterie, en particulier sur Well, me dit Sean Kirkpatrick. Il m'a également parlé de la chanson Is That Important, qui est en fait une chanson qui date d'avant Swell, le tout premier groupe qu'ils ont eu ensemble tous les deux, et qui s'appelait 95 Pounds of Affection. Je vais enchaîner en lui parlant d'un changement qui a eu lieu vraisemblablement avant l'album 41, parce que même si on reconnaît bien sûr le style de Sean Kirkpatrick dans tous les albums de Swell, mais il y a clairement une identité particulière sonore dans 41, et qui est dû au fait que Sean joue avec des ce qu'on appelle des baguettes balai ou des fagots, c'est-à-dire des petites baguettes qui permettent d'avoir une ampleur acoustique un peu réduite, un peu en sourdine, on va dire. Et ça marque complètement l'identité notamment de l'album 41. Et il va m'expliquer que effectivement, il a ressorti ses baguettes qu'il avait utilisées à l'époque où il vivait en Espagne et où David Friel était venu le rejoindre. Et ils jouaient dans la rue tous les deux. Et bon, comme ils jouaient sans s'amplifier, il fallait forcément pouvoir jouer avec des batteries qui n'étaient pas trop sonores et qui auraient pris le dessus sur la guitare acoustique et la voix. Donc, il s'est, entre guillemets, souvenu de ses fagots et de ses baguettes balais. Et s'est dit, tiens, je vais essayer de faire ça sur 41 et je vais essayer d'enregistrer un peu l'air. Je vais mettre les micros plus loin. Je vais enregistrer ce qui se passe dans la pièce et pas seulement les éléments de batterie eux-mêmes. Donc voilà, il a éloigné les micros de 2-3 mètres par rapport à la manière traditionnelle de sonoriser une batterie. Et il a troqué les baguettes classiques de batterie contre ses fagots. You know, speaking of loud... Did you change your drumsticks before the recording of 41? Did you use different drumsticks? Because it really sounds like there was this radical shift between the songs that came out before 41 and 41 itself. So
yeah. Well, that's interesting too, because David and I was living in Spain before we made the first record. He came over to visit me and talk about music, and we started busking on the streets of Spain. And so I had to use these things called they're blastics. Well, of course I have brushes here.
Yeah.
But blastics, you know what those are?
Yeah.
They're like lots of little wood things, yes. Mini pieces of wood. Okay. I had to use those on the streets of busking because they were, otherwise the sticks would be too loud. So of course, we came back and made Swell and Well. But then in 41, I rediscovered those blastics and brushes. And so, yes, I can't remember now, but on two or three songs, I used the blastics. On one song, I used brushes. But I played the brushes like sticks. Mm-hmm. So it's hard, you know, it's not that.
Yeah.
But yes, it gave a different sound. Because we were searching for something that was unconventional. We, you know, that was sort of always the motivation. What could be different without being too artsy and, you know, out there?
Right.
Yeah, 41. And also 41 was remiked differently. I was huge on the drum sound of John Bonham.
Okay.
And come 41, yes, we always did our own production on Swell and Well, the first two records, you know, mic them, etc., ambiently. But in 41, I really wanted more of that Tenderloin Warehouse sound.
Mm-hmm.
So put the mics further back, took everything away from the drums. So yeah, you're right. That album in particular sounds different than Swell and Well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you... That's the record in which you start hearing the air as well, much more than the previous two ones. And it's really part of your drumming style as well. And you were mentioning Bonham. I was wondering, you know, I read the other day that your drumming style was somehow compared to the drummer of Can meets Stuart Copeland.
Yep.
Personally, always thought of Billy Fika from television, especially early Swell stuff. And you know, we were also wondering—I say we because it's a radio program that we are preparing with a friend of mine—and we were thinking of, okay, were they listening at the time to any soul or funk or hip hop or even jazz? You know,
yeah,
like Tony sure. Williams could definitely be quoted like. From Inner Silent Way, I think 41 is the Inner Silent Way of rock music in a way. So,
yeah.
Well, how do you relate to those people and those styles?
So, David, I can never really say what his influences are musically. He wasn't, in my book, a big music listener. Like, he didn't have a record collection. You know, he never had music on when he went there other than, like, AM radio in the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
I know he liked a lot of 70s pop, like Burt Bacharach and things like that. So okay. I can't speak for him, but for me personally, old soul drumming, I grew up in the 70s, not the best neighborhood. So there was a lot of, you know, African-Americans and Chicanos. And so I was really exposed to funk and soul, you know, like I'm always embarrassed to say Cool in the Game because people think of Celebration Time. Come on. But if you listen to the first three records, they are so fucking thick in dark hip funk.
I agree.
l'origine du jeu de Sean, c'est de ça dont on parle maintenant. D'abord, Sean Kirkpatrick me précise que David Friel n'écoutait pas beaucoup de musique. Il n'y avait pas spécialement de disques chez lui. Il écoutait au mieux la radio qui tournait comme ça en fond. Et donc, il a toujours du mal à répondre sur les influences de David Friel. Mais en ce qui le concerne, il a grandi dans un quartier un peu difficile dans les années 70 avec une certaine mixité sociale, culturelle. Et donc, il a écouté beaucoup, notamment de funk. Et il parle par exemple du premier album de Kool & The Gang, qu'on a toujours tendance à associer à Celebrate Good Times. Donc, il est toujours un peu gêné de citer ça comme une influence et comme un son de son enfance. Mais en réalité, c'est vrai que les premiers albums de Kool & The Gang sont une espèce de funk très dur, enregistré un peu au cordeau et produit, mixé de manière assez géniale. Et sur le son de batterie, comme vous venez de l'entendre, il y a effectivement quelque chose de très droit et de très sec. Je lui parle aussi d'une comparaison qui est souvent faite entre son jeu et un mélange entre le batteur de Can et Stuart Copeland, le batteur de The Police. Je lui demande ce qu'il en pense. Je lui dis qu'en ce qui me concerne, j'ai toujours aussi pensé au batteur de Television en écoutant Swell, notamment les premiers Swell, les deux premiers albums de Swell. J'ai toujours fait un parallèle entre le jeu de batterie du batteur de Television et Sean. Donc, il réagit un petit peu à tout ça maintenant.
Summer Madness, you know, if you know that song. I got goosebumps just talking about it. Mm-hmm. So that drumming was like, what? You know, I grew up with rock, and then when I started developing a love for soul, I was like, this is so different, almost jazz-based, especially the drummer Kool & The Gang. So songs like Funky Stuff, where he's so restrained, you know, he could lay into the 2-4 beat, but he's like pulling back. Mm. And another drummer that really was big for me is the Wars drummer. If you listen to the song Slipping in the Darkness, you know, he plays just basically hi-hat and then kick, and he just leaves you wanting more. Mm. And so, yeah, soul, oh, huge. And also jazz, like Art Blakey, and all jazz from the 50s and 60s.
Right.
That drum style, just unconventional. There's that word again, but never like knowing what they're going to play, you know? I just love that.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of the confinements I don't like about playing rock or alternative rock is the verse chorus stuff, you know? So I'm trying to pull away from that from The World Is Haunted.
Oh yeah, that definitely shows in The World Is Haunted for sure.
Yeah, I get sick of that whole format.
Mm. Yeah.
Another drummer, so Stuart Copeland, big, I love him. Love his style. Can's drummer, Jackie Liebeszeit, I can't think you pronounce it, always was an influence in my alternative punk years, you know, because I only discovered him when I started getting into alternative music. Mm. But reggae, I grew up on reggae, so I would have to say Carlton Barrett, love his style. Not only with Bob Marley, but with like Augustus Pablo and King Tubby, all the stuff he did with them. Sly Dunbar, Black Uhuru's drummer,
mm-hmm.
love his stuff. Pete DeFreitas from Echo and the Bunnymen,
okay.
Big influence. I ripped him off on, I think it was Down. I took a fill from him.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And there's another song on Well that I stole a beat from Pete DeFreitas.
I need to figure this out. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I would never have thought of this parallel, really. Yeah.
Yeah, I just love the way he would go from hi-hat to floor tom, like a boom, boom. Type of influence in that song With a Hip, I think it's called, on Heaven Up Here. The whole drumming on Heaven Up Here from him just blew my mind.
Right.
I actually met him in Ireland on the streets, funny enough. I went to see Echo and the Bunnymen in 1983 at a high school gymnasium in Belfast.
Right.
And the next morning I'm getting in my backpack and I'm getting to jump on the train. And there he is taking a walk. I'm like, I just saw you play last night. You know? Yeah. I'm from Palo Alto. Do you remember when you played there? And my friend Monty, his band Half Church, opened for Echo and the Bunnymen. He goes, yes, I remember them. They sounded like Killing Joke. And I said, you're right. Anyways, we had a long chat about drumming. And shortly thereafter, he died. You know, he got in a motorcycle accident somewhere.
Yeah.
But anyways, those are some of the drum influences. Yes, I've heard that a few times. Stuart Copeland means can.
Mm.
And, you know, I think that's okay.
On va écouter quelques exemples et quelques illustrations de ce dont Sean vient de me parler, mais pour vous résumer tout ça en français, il accepte avec grand plaisir la comparaison qui est faite entre son style de batterie et une espèce de croisement entre le batteur de Can et celui de The Police. Il me dit qu'il a beaucoup écouté donc de funk, en particulier les premiers albums de Kool & The Gang. Il me parle de reggae aussi, notamment de Carlton Barrett, qui était le batteur non seulement de Bob Marley, mais d'autres musiciens jamaïcains. Il me parle notamment de Augustus Pablo. Il a également écouté du jazz, et le jazz des années 50-60 est considéré par Sean Kirkpatrick aussi comme une influence dans son jeu dans Swell. Il me parle notamment de Art Blakey. Il me parle du batteur d'un groupe qui s'appelle War. Et enfin, il évoque le batteur de Echo and the Bunnymen. C'est vraiment pas un parallèle que j'aurais fait moi-même, donc c'est intéressant. Il me dit qu'il a même carrément piqué certains de ses plans rythmiques dans des chansons de Swell. Et il me raconte qu'il a croisé justement le batteur de Echo and the Bunnymen le lendemain d'un concert qu'il était allé voir à Belfast. Et il s'est rappelé à son bon souvenir en lui disant « Bah ouais, je suis copain avec un gars qui jouait dans le groupe qui faisait la première partie. » En l'occurrence, c'était Monty Vallier, qui ensuite a fait partie de Swell avec Sean Kirkpatrick. Voilà, donc on va écouter une petite illustration de tout ça en quelques extraits. Et ce sera une petite séquence musicale qui sera conclue par un de mes morceaux préférés de Swell, dont on parle juste après avec Sean, et qui s'appelle « Kind of Stone ».
Will you be my girl? 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 Will you be my girl?
Sure is, yeah. You know, one of the things you've just mentioned is the element of surprise. And this is what Flavien, my friend, who's the co-host of the show, was telling me. One thing he's noticed is that you pretty often come up with surprises on the hi-hat and tambourine. And he imagines that those are like little bombs exploding within the song. Do you agree with this?
Little bombs. I'd have to think about that. But on like that song, What I Always Wanted.
Yeah.
Using the tambourine in that in the ending,
mm-hmm.
instead of playing a beat, I just go to the tambourine.
Yeah,
it felt like the bottom was dropping out, and so of course I stuck with it.
Yeah,
and then on the tambourine, on I played a lot of tambourine on 41. I don't know how I fell in love with the tambourine. I don't know. I just started using it on Well, and then realized that it's so much more than just, well, the hi-hat is okay, but the tambourine can be that much more.
Yeah.
So Little Bombs, I like that. I wanted to say that, go back to influences, dance music, not so much, you know, electronic dance, which I like, but soul, disco, dance music was huge. And that really influenced my drumming on A Kind of Stoned,
mm-hmm.
where you start out with a kick, you know, boom.
Yeah,
and you slowly bring in the snare every fourth hit or something, then you double it up.
Yep,
because it makes the song want to, you know, makes you want to dance.
Mm-hmm.
And I also did the same on Dan, the Son of God, on the first record.
Right.
So yeah, disco dance. I really love that shit. Like, I Feel Love, Donna Summer's song. Yeah. You know,
okay.
The All drumming right. in that. You know what song I really love the drumming on, which is I think a big ripoff from disco, is Japan's. Bump, bump. Still, Life in Tokyo. Do you know that song?
Yeah,
I do. The extended mix where it gets really dancey.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
That drumming was a big influence. I think who produced that song was the guy that did Donna Summer's dance music.
Right.
It's an Italian name. I don't remember his name.
Moroder, maybe, or?
Yeah. Mm-mm. Anyways, but the tambourine. Yeah, you know, I love the tambourine, and it's not fitting in the world of Haunted, damn it. I try it and it just doesn't feel right.
Okay. No, yo, I completely agree with you. I can't imagine it in the world of Haunted. But you know, I'm really glad that you've mentioned What I've Always Wanted, because to me, the first time I heard that particular tambourine filling at the end of the song, like tum ta, tum ta, tum tum ta.
Yeah,
that's the most moving drumming I've ever heard. It's like, no, it's not here anymore. It's gone, you know.
Yeah.
And you're playing with absence. You're playing with non drumming, and with you're playing basically playing with ghosts, and it's just it's fabulous, really.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. Well, you just were humming the beat to that were What I Always Wanted, and if you listen to that beat. I lay a snare out. I don't hit a snare where you wanted it to be. It's like, dun, da, dun, da, and then I miss one, and then I go to the tambourine.
Yeah.
You know, and I also did that in Here It Is on 41.
Of course.
Again, it's because I just can't stand the steadiness of a regular drum beat, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm,
so I just want to leave you, like the bottom fell out
for a
second. Like, oh, fuck. Oh, there's a beat again.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly it. This is really how it feels. Okay, well, I want to thank you so much. I just want to maybe finish with one thing. I really like your singing voice, which, you know, I discovered on Soon Enough. I believe you sang that song, right?
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite Swell songs.
Wow.
Yeah, I really like this song. I really like the fact that, again, you don't start singing very early in the song. There's this whole intro, and then you start singing, I'm going to find my way to the world. And I really like the way you sing in The World Is Haunted as well. Like the lead vocals, was that an obvious thing for you? How did you come up with, you know, or how did you feel the urge of singing in The World Is Haunted? Was it obvious because you were the songwriter as well?
Well, initially I wanted a female singer, and when I started writing music, I would just lay down scratch tracks for the eventual female singer.
Mm.
I did find some three or four different women that I love that mm-hmm. sing on the first album.
Yep.
But the scratch tracks, people started going, dude, that sounds really good. You should keep it, you know? And then it obviously is easier for me to sing because they don't have to bring somebody in, you know, and with their schedule, and it's hard for people to come. And so I just found more and more that I wanted to get the songs finished. The song, the vocals were acceptable. People started liking them. And so, yes, that it sort of evolved by necessity that I just started singing all the songs, or most of them. I still am having women, three or four of these people that I found, sing every now and then, but I'm starting to feel that there's something unique about adding my voice with them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like either they're in the front and I'm in the lower in the mix, or vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
So that's sort of become my identity in Little Sonnet. As far as that song goes on Whenever You're Ready that you mentioned, David is like, I don't know what to do with this song. He goes, you want to try it singing? Mm-hmm. He goes, by the way, I've always wanted to ask you or Monty to sing because I hate singing. I'm like, sure, I'll give it a shot. And so mm-hmm. he came back the next day to my house. We recorded that at my house, actually, ironically, in Santa Barbara. Because by that time, of course, 41 was gone and David was living, I think, in Portland or something. So he, you know, came back the next morning. He's like, wow, cool. And then he's like, you want to sing on more of the album? I'm like, no. So, but that was the beginning of me realizing, wow, maybe, you know, if I ever do my own stuff.
Mm.
So, yeah.
It could work. All right.
You're going to have to edit some of my coughing out because my son gave me a summer cold. So I've got this little tickle
it's
thing.
It's okay. No worries. Yeah. I'll edit it out. Right. Okay. Let's save the idea for another time, but there's a whole other chapter I want to cover with you someday, you know, whenever you want, about painting, because I also love your painting, your art. I actually have a poster of yours, which actually I got for my birthday a few years ago, and the present came from Flavien, my co-host. So we have this relationship with Swell that has been going on for years. And you know, maybe another day when we decide to focus on the relationship between music and painting, you know, I'm thinking Captain Beefheart, things like that. So maybe I could get in touch again and we could talk about it another day.
Yeah, man, anytime. I like talking about music and art. It's funny you should say, are you in a hurry?
No. I'm just, of course not.
Okay. No. I was going to say, it's funny you should mention my painting because in the last 10 years, I've only done one or two paintings because I took a fucking job out of necessity 10 years ago, mm-hmm. a corporate job, and stopped painting because who has the energy to create when you're working 40 to 50 hours a week and taking care of kids?
Yeah, it's alienating.
So sadly, I put it to bed. And right when I came back from the tour in Europe, I'm like, you know what? I'm not a corporate person. I can't do this anymore. I'm a painter. I'm an artist. I'm a musician, you know, mm-hmm. granted mm-hmm. we all have to pay our bills, but I'm not going to let fear get in the way anymore of me creating. You know, I'm going to be 60 years old, August 30th. Okay. I don't have a lot of good years left and I sure in the hell don't want to spend them doing a job that shrinks my soul.
Yeah.
You know? So, I'm in the midst of quitting my job at the moment, scared shitless because I don't know what I'm going to do financially.
Yeah.
But I got to do it. I can't let fear stop me. And one of the things I want to dive into is my painting because, you know, it's part of me and I haven't been doing it for 10 bloody years and that breaks my heart.
Mm-hmm.
Same with music. You know, I put it to bed really for the last 15 or so years. And as I don't know how I did it, but the last 3 years I've been working on The World is Haunted with my job and kids.
Yeah.
Has been quite the challenge, but I did it, made the first record. And now, as I said, I'm quitting my job and, you know, I want to try to sell my paintings again and blah, blah, blah. So yeah, look for more. There'll be a lot more art, but I don't think it'll be the same style. I have no idea, but I don't,
okay.
You know, it'll be similar, but after 10 years of taking a break, something's got to shift.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sure. So,
I think looser is where I want to go with it, even looser.
Okay.
No detail. I don't want to sit there and not that I really did in the past, but I did more than I would have liked to sit there and, you know, fine tune the palm leaf and stuff like that. It's like, I just want brush strokes that suggest, well, like drumming, that suggests something, but leave you like,
Right. Right. Yeah. The poster I have is a depiction of a railway, and the perspective is very, very detailed for sure. And so, yeah, I can relate to what you're saying.
Yeah.
Your inspiration, your aspiration to sort of suggest more in the future. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just, you know, I think good art in my book allows the listener or viewer space to interpret how he wishes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
No definite definition of what it should be. Anyways, we could talk forever about that, but
sure. Yeah.
Et voilà comment le batteur de Swell et le batteur chanteur de The World is Haunted, Sean, conclut cet entretien. L'art devrait ne pas être une définition définitive de ce qui devrait être. L'art devrait suggérer, évoquer. Et il me parle de tout ça après avoir mentionné une autre partie, un autre pan de sa vie artistique qui est la peinture. Parce que Sean Kirkpatrick est également un excellent peintre, qui a réalisé notamment les pochettes, toutes les pochettes de Swell. Il me parle juste avant de son amour pour une certaine forme de dance music, notamment basée sur, là aussi, une forme de groove un peu suggérée, plutôt que très appuyée. Il me parle de I Feel Love par Donna Summer. On part d'un morceau qui s'intitule Life in Tokyo par le groupe Japan. Donc on va écouter deux extraits de ces deux chansons et on va se quitter avec une chanson dont je lui parle à la fin, qui est une chanson de Swell, Soon Enough, la seule chanson dans tout Swell qui est chantée par lui, Sean, suite à une proposition que lui avait faite David Friel, le chanteur de Swell. Et c'est peut-être un peu ce qui a ouvert la porte vers ce champ des possibles, vers un projet musical où il serait une voix, une des voix, en l'occurrence dans The World is Haunted, accompagné par d'autres chanteurs invités et chanteuses.
They diagnosed me as schizophrenic, but I don't believe in that. I don't believe in these monikers of schizophrenic. You know, if you're nervous, you're nervous. If you're not, you're not.
Oh, fuck, man.